future advancement for their children. The result has been a vast expansion in institutions of higher learning. Third world enrollment in them rose on average 10% a year during the 1960s, and even faster during the 1970s, though here in Asia, the rate of expansion has moderated. Worldwide, the pressures which have ensued have proved inexorable and in many cases uncontrollable. Universities have consumed a heavy proportion of national expenditure. The supply of qualified teachers has fallen short, while secondary schools have often put forward students who are insufficiently prepared for the higher intellectual demands of a university. Above all, most third world universities have found themselves face to face with a fundamental problem: how to reconcile local needs with loyalty to international standards. All too often they have failed on both counts. They have allowed students to pursue arts or law degrees irrespective of either long-term national requirements or immediate job opportunities. At the same time, academic standards have declined under the weight of numbers, cost, and poor tuition. Today, disillusion has set in. Courses are disrupted by student unrest. Academic criteria are challenged. Failure is attributed to modern Western models of universities being inappropriate to developing countries, with additional blame being thrown on Western materialism for corrupting values. Where does the truth lie? The truth, as the famous Islamic scholars repeatedly told their students, is that the spirit of disciplined, objective inquiry is the property of no single culture, but of all humanity. To quote the great physician and philosopher Ibn Sina, "My profession is to be forever journeying, to travel about the universe so that I may know all its conditions." It is these journeys of the mind which our students must make, for what is the study of science but man's endeavor to comprehend the universe of God's creation, the immediate world around him and himself? The laws of science are not bounded by cultures, nor should there be any basic conflict between loyalty to high academic standards and service to practical development needs. A good doctor, lawyer, economist, manager or engineer is not simply a person committed to social good. He or she must have acquired the searching curiosity and the disciplined habits of mind which enthusiasm and commitment cannot alone supply, but which the modern university can. There is no weakness in principle with the university as it has evolved today. The weaknesses lie rather in universities having resources too limited for their task, in the kind of faculties they have established, in the curricula they have offered, above all in the standards they have set themselves. The overall aim of the Aga Khan University will be to make clear and rational judgments as to which foreseeable future needs of the developing countries require new educational programs, and having identified those openings, to address them by the appropriate means, setting the highest standards possible, whether in teaching, in research, or in service. The progress of the School of Nursing has already been mentioned. Its concept illustrates our aims and methods. The school derived from the serious shortage of qualified nurses in Pakistan, a shortage partly attributable to their low standing. The architectural quality of the school's buildings is a visible affirmation of the inspiration of Islamic design and of the importance we attach to the nursing profession. The training programs have been evolved with generous aid from Canada. Thus we have drawn successfully on the human and technical resources of both East and West. We hope next to introduce something which has never before been available in Pakistan, namely a degree in nursing. So the school is fulfilling precisely those aspirations which I have outlined for the university. It is meeting a carefully identified requirement, raising standards, and introducing new concepts. Having decided upon the curricula, our approach to learning will be in the high traditions of intellectual inquiry I have already described, teaching students not simply to memorize factual knowledge, but to use that knowledge to identify and to solve problems. We hope that the habit of applying logical and disciplined thought to questions and the appreciation of research will remain with our graduates throughout their lives. The charter which His Excellency the President has granted us establishes a number of important principles. The Aga Khan University will be open to all comers, regardless of color, creed, race, or class. And my wish is that the only criteria which will count for admission will be merit and potential for leadership. The charter further lays down that the purpose of the Aga Khan University will be the promotion and dissemination of knowledge and technology, and that it will be a fully autonomous corporate body with freedom to govern its academic functions and the right to grant degrees. Academic freedom is in the truest spirit of Islam. Without it, excellence cannot be achieved. From the start of my grandfather's association with the Muslim University of Aligarh, he insisted that it should preach the gospel of free inquiry, of large-hearted toleration, and of pure morality. That ideal will never lose its validity, and I commend it to the trustees of the Aga Khan University. However, academic freedom also imposes responsibilities, both to the university's defined academic mission and to society. Freedom must not be allowed to degenerate into license, whether in universities or in society as a whole. When it has so degenerated, it has invariably destroyed the very civilizations which gave it birth. Throughout man's history, there have been periods when political stability and seemingly assured economic growth have tempted educational institutions to stray from their true academic tasks and give rein to political involvement, social ambition, or moral indulgence. In other words, to allow freedom to lapse into license. To maintain one's own integrity at such times may be difficult and unpopular, but only by maintaining it can an institution of this kind justify the privileges it has been given and the faith placed in it by its founders. The Aga Khan University has a number of constituencies to which the charter encourages it to respond and with which it must keep faith. The Pakistan nation, the Islamic Ummah, including my own community, the third world countries of Asia and Africa. As I have already indicated, it must address itself to subjects relevant to the development and civilizations of these constituencies, if possible, responding to challenges in an international context. This is why the charter specially allows the university to establish faculties abroad. Whilst it is too early to say where these might be, it is my wish that this should become an international university, able to mobilize resources from other countries, to coordinate international research, and to encourage the exchange of ideas between nations. We may find it appropriate to teach or research such subjects as the administration of social institutions, education, rural development, communications in all its aspects, and architecture. Equally, We may wish to assist men and women who have successfully established themselves in politics, in government, in business, or in the social services, and who want to return to an academic institution briefly for advanced courses in political theory, public administration, or any other of the many subjects directly related to improving their capability in the senior positions they occupy. Such possibilities make it essential for the faculties and the curricula to be flexible. Accordingly, the charter permits the university to expand as need arises. I have spoken of new initiatives and present deficiencies. Inevitably, priorities will alter as the years and time and history unfold. And the university must be able to adapt itself to change. But one thing will remain constant. The mission of preparing graduates, men and women, to play constructive, worthwhile, and responsible roles in society. Your Excellency, it is with great emotion and pride that I have today accepted the charter of the Arcan University from you. My hope is that this institution will bring credit upon the country which has given it birth and the men and women who have made it possible, first among them, Your Excellency.